Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Approximately 6,000 babies are born with Down syndrome every year in the U.S., but much about the disorder is still unknown or misunderstood. But individuals with Down syndrome frequently live long and fulfilling lives, but with some challenges. What can we do as a community to provide comfort, support, and inclusion to folks with Down syndrome and their families? How could families prepare for a child with this diagnosis? What resources and support services are available for living with Down syndrome here locally, and their families and their parents and their caregivers? You can call into our conversation. We really want to hear your stories. How has Down syndrome touched your life? What do you want others to know about this? 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You can also email us with your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour by Nicole Galindo. She is a development manager for the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas. Nicole, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
With us online, we're joined by Dr. Brian Scottco, board-certified medical geneticist, and with the director of the Down Syndrome Program at Massachusetts General Hospital, associate professor at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Brian Scottco, good to have you, sir.
Thanks, Dave, for having me.
And also with us online, Ashley Helsing is the director of government affairs with the National Down Syndrome Society. Ashley, good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So let me start off with asking Nicole Galindo about the local community here in San Antonio, in Bexar County. Well, how substantial, how big is it?
Well, we're a staff of five. So small staff, but we serve about 1,200 to 1,300 families in our community. We do serve Bexar County, like you said, but we also serve the seven surrounding counties as well here in San Antonio and South Texas. It's a growing community. We were a small community started in 1994 by a family, families who had an individual with Down syndrome who just needed support and to someone to talk to. And then eventually it grew and we became a nonprofit, a 501c3 in 2003. And so from there, it's just continuously growing. And, there are some families who have been around for, you know, since back then. So it's really awesome to see and hear their stories and see the vision that we have to continue to grow and continue to reach more families here in San Antonio and South Texas.
Do you come into contact with families that have a member who has Down syndrome and they didn't know that you were here, that there was a group here locally, and then they suddenly realize, there's someone here who can help me?
Yes, there's been a few families who, you know, will have a toddler from 4 years old, and they were like, I had no idea you guys were here, that we had no idea the resources you guys provided and the support that you guys provided. And so what we've been doing the past year or so is really going out to the hospitals and providing our information so that when the families are there and the baby's born with Down syndrome, the doctors and nurses and whoever are saying, here, there's the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas, and they're here to support you guys with anything that you might need. So that's how we've been growing in the past year or so.
All right. Dr. Brian Scottco, can you tell us more about Down syndrome? What does it mean when you say an individual has been diagnosed with Down syndrome?
So Down syndrome is one of the most common chromosomal conditions in humans. The typical person has 23 pairs of chromosomes, and chromosomes are those packages of genes that tell our body how to function. In most people with Down syndrome, they have an extra chromosome, so an extra package of genes. So rather than having the typical 46 chromosomes, they have an extra one leading to 47 chromosomes. And it's the 21st pair that's triplicated that leads to Down syndrome. Now, it's important to know that no one causes Down syndrome. We know that it increases in chances as a mother gets older, but sometimes that extra chromosome comes from the mom and sometimes it comes from the dad. What we do know is when you have extra material on a chromosome, sometimes it comes with extra good protection. So people with Down syndrome almost never get breast cancer. They almost never get solid tumors. And that's because, yet to be discovered, there must be some protective factors of having extra genes. We also know that when you have extra genes on chromosome 21, it could also lead to some medical challenges and some educational challenges. And that's why we're all here together to make sure we're supporting people with Down syndrome to achieve their best.
And so Ashley Helsing with the National Down Syndrome Society, what is happening on your front? How are you helping lead the nation towards understanding what's happening with Down syndrome?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for the question. So at NDSS, we are the leading human rights organization for all individuals with Down syndrome. We have so many different ways that people can get involved in as self-advocates in advocating for themselves and, you know, as friends and family that they can get involved for advocating for their loved ones, including our inclusive health and wellness program that includes our national buddy walk, our athlete ambassador and charity racing teams. Under the National Advocacy and Public Policy Center, we have our DS Works program, our inclusive education program, as well as our grassroots network that helps us get things done at the federal, state, and local level. Our National Advocacy and Public Policy Center works on issues across the lifespan and are centered around healthcare and research, education, employment, economic self-sufficiency, and community integration. So we do everything from helping students with Down syndrome advocate for inclusive placements in their classrooms and working with lawmakers to change the more systemic issues that we have that people with Down syndrome and other disabilities face at a national level.
So tell me more about that. What are some of these laws that you're addressing?
Absolutely. So back in October of 2017, we launched our campaign to end Law Syndrome. The premise behind Law Syndrome is that it's never been Down syndrome that has held anybody back, but it's rather old, antiquated laws that are still on the books that do. So a really good example of this is our work around the issue of subminimum wage. Currently under Section 14C of the Fair Labor Standards Act, businesses can get a special wage certificate from the Department of Labor that allows them to pay individuals with Down syndrome and other disabilities below minimum wage. We've seen wages as low as 5 cents an hour. With this law still on the books after 80 years, it just shows, that there's still discrimination against people with Down syndrome and other disabilities. So we're working very hard at the federal level on the Transformation to Competitive Employment Act, which phases out the 14C certificate over 6 years and provides some money in the form of capacity buildings to states to help with that transformation process so businesses can adjust their models to pay a fair wage. We're also working on marriage access, which is very important. Currently, people on benefits risk their benefits when they get married because their incomes are combined with their spouses and the income threshold is lowered. So this is, a very important issue for people with Down syndrome who want to get married because they cannot risk those vital benefits that they have.
All right, we're going to take a break here, but you bring up a great point. You say people with Down syndrome who want to get married, and people may say, they're not aware that that is an outcome that could happen for individuals with Down syndrome. We're going to talk about people who have every bit as right, and they have the desires, and they want to be able to get married, and they want to live lives, they want to have this incredible existence, the same as you and me. How do we help that happen? Give us a call. Tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Down syndrome, and our phone lines are open. You can call in, tell us about how Down syndrome has impacted, has touched your life, your family's life. The number is 210-614-8980. What we really want to do today is break down some of the misconceptions and some of the artificial barriers that maybe we have in our society and here locally. We're very fortunate to have organizations or a facility like Morgan's Wonderland, which is a theme park that is very inclusive. And, you know, this is, and we need more like that. How can we do that? How can we encourage it? How can we put up the sign that says Down syndrome welcome all throughout our society and our city and our community? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Nicole Galindo with the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas. How do we do that? How do we put up that sign?
I think it's just us being advocates for that, you know, for these individuals with Down syndrome and showing that they have the same potential as we do. And, you know, it may be a little more work for them and maybe take a little longer, but they have the same potential as anybody in this room, if you and me, you know, and I get to see that almost on a daily basis. And it just amazes me how some people still don't get it. And so that's why we love to have these conversations to know, to show people that it's very possible. And, you know, you have big corporations like HEB and who are employing, you know, individuals with Down syndrome, and you see them throughout the stores and, you know, they're doing the same job as anybody else. And I think, again, just being self advocates and, you know, now we have social media. We're in a digital age where we're able to really promote that on another level. And that's what we like to do at the DSA and promote that. It's all about inclusion.
But real quickly, Nicole Galindo with the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas, people like these companies or others may say they don't want to make others uncomfortable because we're going to have folks with Down syndrome working in our facilities or, mm-hmm. and we have to basically really let them know that that's crazy talk. That doesn't exist anymore. Okay. Yeah. It's 2020. Okay. Let's put that aside.
Yes, exactly. And, again, like I said, I think it's important for us to live in a society of inclusion. Again, I go back to the whole have that full potential in their lives. So again, it's, really raising awareness on our level, and we look for partnerships in our community to really help us raise that awareness of inclusion.
Ashley Helsing with the National Down Syndrome Society. What's being done nationally to make the entire nation and the world know that Down syndrome is not a condition of isolation, it is part of our community?
Absolutely, Dave. We are working you know, as I mentioned, through our inclusive education program to get that process started from the beginning. You know, when children are included in their classrooms, it makes all the difference for future outcomes. You know, it's very hard when a child with Down syndrome is in a segregated classroom, not learning next to their typically developing peers, to all of a sudden say at age 18 or 21, all right, out into the workforce. So, you know, to piggyback off of what Nicole said, it really starts from the beginning, inclusion. And, you know, once students are in inclusive classrooms, it's so much easier for them to go out into society and get those jobs. And we work with companies from Main Street to Wall Street to make sure that individuals with Down syndrome are included in the workforce and make sure that they're hiring people with Down syndrome. You know, they enrich workplaces so much. About 25% of our staff here at the National Down Syndrome Society has Down syndrome, and from personal experience, they just make it so much better, and they really drive home our mission of being the leading human rights organization for all individuals with Down syndrome.
Dr. Brian Scottco, there are differences. People who have Down syndrome, they're going to have specific physical issues, cognitive issues. Can you tell us what that would entail?
Sure. We know that when someone has an extra copy of chromosome 21, there is a medical playbook that kind of comes along, and there are certain conditions that we could look out for. The good news is most of the co-occurring conditions that come along with Down syndrome are either preventable or treatable with good health care. So, for example, people with Down syndrome could sometimes have changes in their thyroid. So too much or too little thyroid can lead to some symptoms. But we could check that and get to those symptoms. symptoms before they start to occur. So that's one of the things with good medical care that we could check for. Another example is celiac disease. About 5% of people with Down syndrome will have some GI sensitivities to gluten-containing products. We could start to know that goes along with Down syndrome and be able to identify that early so that people with Down syndrome who have that can make the dietary modifications. The challenge, Dave, however, is that less than 10% of people with Down syndrome are kept up to date on the most basic recommendations and healthcare guidelines. And this is because the average day primary care doctor who is working so hard only probably has one or two patients with Down syndrome in their practice. So it's unreasonable and impractical to think that all primary care physicians are going to stay up to date on the latest medical recommendations for people with Down syndrome. So the next challenge is, how do we bring the best information, the best medical information, to people around the globe, no matter where they are, so there's no disparities in healthcare? And that's something we're all trying to work on very hard.
But doctor, I read that there is a high probability that if a person has Down syndrome, they may have complications with their heart.
We know about 50% of babies born with Down syndrome will have some structural change in their heart. A smaller percentage will require surgery. But the good news now is people like my very own sister with Down syndrome who needed heart repair, it's done effectively, it's done well, and it doesn't get in the way. So thanks to the cardiac surgeons and the physicians who are keeping people with Down syndrome healthy, they're living now longer lives than they've ever lived before, with the average lifespan now nearly approaching 60 years of age.
It used to be thought, and we're talking about like in the 50s and before, that in individuals with Down syndrome, that their lifespan would only be maybe 20 years old. And is that only because of they were not given provided good health care, and they were neglected, and they were put in institutions, or and now we realize that was an artificially low health lifespan because of maltreatment?
Nothing has changed about the chromosomes over the years. What really has changed is access to medical care, knowledge about medical care, and really societal limitations. The biggest limitations that get in the way of our patients with Down syndrome are access to care and societal limitations. I like to say the best is yet to come. We're still learning more in science. We still need to make sure that everyone in America, let alone the world, gets access to up-to-date, accurate care. And until then, I don't think we've seen the best yet that's potentially possible from our friends with Down syndrome.
Now, we got an email from Jessica. I am a mother of a 2-year-old daughter with Down syndrome. Our sweet girl is such joy. We look to the future. I want to know what schools and businesses are doing to make room for people with intellectual differences. How can families advocate for inclusion and equal rights in San Antonio specifically? I can give my child all the tools, therapies, and training needed to be an independent member of society, but we as a community need to make room in our lives for people like my daughter. So, how do we do that locally, Nicole? You know, you're with the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas. What can you tell Jessica?
Well, Jessica, I think being a part of our community and getting involved with us at the association and helping us provide that advocacy to lead more into an inclusive community. You know, we do a lot of programs and we do a lot of outreach, but again, it's a small staff and we look to parents and families and friends to really be advocates for us as well. And so we love having new families. We love having new parents come in. You can find us online. You can give us a call on ways to get involved to help us really push the inclusion within here in San Antonio.
So tell me more about so there's some doctors, I guess even like pediatricians, mm-hmm. who are reluctant to take on children who have Down syndrome.
Yes.
So do we have enough specialties, doctors who have specialized this in this area?
There's a few. There's quite a few that we really recommend in our community here in San Antonio, of course. And so, but I think eventually we're gonna need more doctors and more doctors and health providers that are specialized in special needs, especially with Down syndrome. And I think it breaks down to maybe if it's almost like in your classroom, like it's a disturbance, and And these kids need as much help as anybody else. And so I think there is going to be a need for that where doctors really specialize in that.
And Ashley Helsing with the National Down Syndrome Society, I guess one word of advice might be know your rights.
Absolutely. You know, under the federal law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, your daughter, Jessica, has the right to be included in her classrooms. And that's really, you know, from our perspective, the first place that we can be really helpful. You know, we sit down with students and families every single day and help them with their IEPs so they can be included in those classrooms. And that's really the best way to set your daughter up for success, for sure.
What, be prepared to fight? Is that another piece of advice? I mean, yes. You may go to the school district and find out that they've never had an individual with Down syndrome show up to register, and they are just befuddled.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one thing that I love about this community is I've never seen such fierce advocates as parents of children with Down syndrome, because they do stand up every single day for the rights for their children, and especially their students. You know, when they get to school and they have to tell the school district, no, this is my child's rights under federal law. So we're always happy to help families and be on the sides of families in those fights, for sure.
And so what are some of the misconceptions that a school district might have about a child who shows up? I mean, so Nicole, do they say they're going to be disruptive, it's not going to work well, it's going to hurt the atmosphere in the classroom?
Exactly.
They throw all that out there.
Yes, they do. And it's actually happened pretty frequently where our director of education has had to go with a family to the school district and kind of tell them, you know, there's rights here. And they have the same rights as anybody else. And they're able to be in that same classroom. And they do think it's going to be a disruptive classroom, that it's going to stop the other kids from growing and learning, where they just need to accept that it's that the individual with Down syndrome has that right to be there.
And Ashley Helsing, the child is dealing with the intellectual disability, though. I mean, do they have to have special accommodations in the classroom?
Certainly. Sometimes, you know, our students do need accommodations, but again, under federal law, that's their right to have those accommodations. And it's very, you know, individualized. Each IEP is completely different, depending on the accommodations that the student needs. But, you know, it's so important that those accommodations are given, because it's, again, their right to have those accommodations in the classroom.
So, like, what could they do for them? Are they going to get the same sort of coursework as everyone else in that classroom? How does that work?
So it really depends on the individual student. Sometimes it's, you know, modifications to how the curriculum is taught. You know, we're always told, you know, some people are visual learners, some people are audio learners, and it's the same for individuals with Down syndrome. Just sometimes explaining the information in a different way is the easiest way for them to retain that information.
And,
you know, extra time on tests, things like that, that, you know, are their right guaranteed under IDEA.
And Nicole, so if someone runs into a problem, are you there to help them advocate?
Yes, we are. We are there to support them in any possible way they need. If we don't have that resource, we guide them to the right person or the right organization where they can get that assistance. So if it's not us, we know who to call.
Okay, so when we come back from this coming up break, we want to talk about what adulthood looks like for individuals with Down syndrome. These are individuals, they grow up, they leave school, they look for jobs, and they want to have adult lives. Of course they do. And what does that look like? And also for families, for young families, when you get the word that you have a child that's been diagnosed with Down syndrome, how do you process that? It can be a challenge, but there are folks who have gone through that, and we'll talk about that when we're coming back as well. The number to call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We really want to hear from local families. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Immigration.
I think
think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health. The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today we're talking about Down syndrome. What have you seen in San Antonio in regards to Down syndrome? Has it impacted your life? If you've raised a child with Down syndrome, what advice would you give parents preparing to raise a child with this diagnosis? Have you learned what some things that could help others? Have you gone through the struggles that other people have gone through as trying to integrate into society with children with Down syndrome? How can we as a community better incorporate individuals with physical and intellectual diversity? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And so, Nicole, we're with the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas, and there's a prenatal test that people can take, mothers can take, and mm-hmm. they can give some. And is it like conclusive that it's your child's going to have Down syndrome?
I think there's two different types of tests. That one of them is a very 100% accurate, and the other one's not. And we've had some parents come in. There's been a family that's really involved where they took a test to find out the gender of the baby, and it came back saying that the baby had Down syndrome. So that was when they first found out. They weren't finding out to see if the baby was going to, you mm-hmm. know, have
It's not a routine test.
No, it's not. And so some people take it to find out, and some people are completely okay with, you know, going into labor and not knowing and being okay no matter what the outcome is, which it should be and what we want. But they do have tests now where you're able to find out pre-birth.
But I can imagine that for some parents, finding out that information, they're going to need maybe someone to talk to.
Yes, and that's where we come in. We are there. Each month we have new and expectant parent breakfast where we welcome these new families or this a mom who's expecting a baby with Down syndrome, and we help guide them and the resources and their rights to what they need to know and when having a baby and when raising a baby with Down syndrome, and how we can help them overcome any type of quote unquote burden that they may face, because it's different, and you know they have different health issues where parents have no idea how to overcome that. So we're there to help them with that.
Right. So I can imagine just the unknowing, the mm-hmm. uncertainty. Like I'm told that my child is diagnosed or is Down syndrome, and we're not preparing for that. And now we have to process that. And they talk to other parents and they mm-hmm. can find out this is not the end of the world. This is not devastating. Actually,
right.
I mean, people have wonderful, beautiful, happy families.
Right, exactly. And we do have parents who are doing, we kind of do like a parent-to-parent, like a mentor-to-mentor kind of thing where we pair them up, of course, at their willingness, and they're able to kind of guide these parents with this news, you know, and kind of show them the ins and outs of whatever questions they may have. And, you know, it's different when you're talking to someone who's been through it, right? And so that's what our families are there for. And the community's great and they help each other out. And I've seen it firsthand where they become the best of friends because of this bond that they have.
Dr. Brian Scott Coe, with the director of the Down Syndrome Program at Massachusetts General Hospital, associate professor at Harvard Medical School. What do you think about these, the prenatal test? Should they be standard? And how are doctors trained in delivering the information that the child maybe has been diagnosed with Down syndrome?
Well, we know these new expensive prenatal tests are on a bullet train headed right towards all of the OBGYN offices. But I oftentimes say the information and the support for parents are still in a Conestoga wagon. There is a a disequilibrium, if you will, between the technology and the supportive information. It is true that technology has advanced, so with the simple blood draw, parents can learn with increased accuracy the chances that their fetus might have Down syndrome or a variety of other genetic conditions. But when it comes to, are they able to make an informed decision? Do they have all the facts, the up-to-date information, the access to groups to be able to make a decision? We know from research that parents still say a resoundingly no. They still feel like they're left unsupported, lacking the resources and lacking the information to be able to do so. And it's not because that information does not exist. The National Down Syndrome Society has worked with many other groups to create materials from lettercase.org in order to make those materials available. It becomes a matter of dissemination. How do we make sure that the good information gets to all the families at a critical moment when they need it?
Ashley Helsing with the National Down Syndrome Society. This is an uncomfortable question for me to ask, but I'm going to put it out there. I understand that there's laws that have been passed and some people advocating for bans on women who would terminate a pregnancy of a child that they've learned has been diagnosed with Down syndrome. Do y'all have a position on that?
So we do not have a position on those. What we advocate for is exactly what Dr. Scott Coe said. You know, we advocate for making sure that women and families have the most up-to-date information on Down syndrome and that they're getting, you know, compassionate, accurate information from their doctors. You know, we hear so many horror stories every single day about, you know, when families in receive their diagnosis that, you know, the doctors are telling them all of these terrible things that will happen to their child with Down syndrome, when that's, as we know, is just not the case. You know, as has been mentioned so many times, individuals with Down syndrome can grow up and live wonderful, fulfilling lives, and that's what needs to get to women and doctors is the up-to-date information.
So sounds like what we're saying here is that we need to be able to inform, educate parents who have gotten this information that this is not terrible news, it's just information, and that they can have a beautiful child and a beautiful family moving forward. They don't have to take any sort of drastic action that they normally otherwise would not take. This is something that they need processing and they need information. They need to be made to know that everything is going to be okay, and so they can move forward with the child in pre-birth that has been diagnosed with Down syndrome. Is that right, Ashley?
Yes, that is correct. You know, one of the first things that we train new staff members on at NDSS is when you get a call from a new parent, is you say congratulations first and foremost, and sometimes we are the first people to say that to parents and families that receive this diagnosis. But, you know, it's a new baby that they're welcoming into the world, and congratulations are in order.
Okay, and so Dr. Brian Scott Coe, we kind of went over this earlier, but I want to emphasize this and I want a better understanding of this answer. A child that has been diagnosed with Down syndrome, it sounds like you said earlier that they're not likely to have all of these other complications with their health, that it's not going to be a massive, overly burdened financially for a family to help that individual grow up and have a fulfilling life. Is that right?
We know with good medical care, people with Down syndrome are living happy and healthy lives. It then becomes a question of, do they have access to all the medical care and the up-to-date information? But we do know that there are co-occurring medical conditions that can occur in some people with Down syndrome. It's a matter of being a physician and working with a family to be able to detect those and prevent them before they start setting in. For those that are unavoidable, we do have ways of treating and helping people with Down syndrome live as happy and as healthy lives as possible.
So these other states, it hasn't happened in Texas, but other states have passed laws that ban terminating pregnancies of pre-birth children who have diagnosed with Down syndrome. But those laws do they also include support for the medical help down the road, Ashley Helsing?
So many of the bills that we've seen just ban abortions based on Down syndrome, and they're pretty, you know, most of the ones that we've seen are pretty straightforward in that. We are working at the state level on passing Down syndrome information bills that include, you know, this up-to-date information for individuals and families who do get the diagnosis of Down syndrome. So that is the legislation that we focused our efforts on in this issue.
Okay, let me go to a caller, and this is Rafa. And Rafa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to offer a reflection. I don't have children with special gifts, but I do believe that every family has a moral obligation to provide or provide their own children that exposure to children of all need levels, right? And ensure that our school districts do the same thing to ensure that inclusivity just doesn't mean be aware of, but be a part of, right? So making sure that our children understand there are people of different levels of need with different gifts is going to go a long way to ensure that we cultivate this communal knowledge of and appreciation for everybody.
All right, Rafa, thank you for that. And Nicole Galindo with the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas, I mean, that's something that you have been advocating for.
Yes, and when we have our programs and our events that take place throughout the year, it's not open just to individuals with Down syndrome. It's open to any and everybody because at the end of the day, it should be all inclusive, right? And so, especially like our events, whether it's a holiday party or a buddy walk, you know, our family fun days, it's open to everybody. And I promote that myself with my family, my nephews and nieces and my godsons. Like, you guys come, like, bring them so they can see it should be one big event instead of having like, well, the special needs kids have their own thing compare it versus this. And I think that's something that we try to do on the daily.
All right. We're going to take another break. Our phone lines are open. If you would want to call in, tell us about your experiences with Down syndrome. What do you think we can do to be more welcoming here in San Antonio for everyone with genetic diversity? 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Down syndrome. Our phone line is 210-614-8980. Ashley Helsing with the National Down Syndrome Society, adult with Down syndrome. I guess you advocate for them.
We do, absolutely. You know, the life expectancy of individuals with Down syndrome in 1983 was 25, and now individuals are living into their 60s. So it's new territory for all of us, you know, advocacy organizations at the local level, like Nicole's organization, and, you know, at the national level, like ours. But we need to make sure that they have what they need across the lifespan into their aging years.
What does that look like? What is an adult with Down syndrome? What kind of life can they expect to have?
So, you know, they can expect, as Dr. Scott Coe has mentioned, some co-occurring conditions. You know, Alzheimer's and dementia there's a very high prevalence in the Down syndrome population of those, but, you know, catching it early and making sure that you have those resources in place. We recently released a caregiver's guide for individuals with Down syndrome who are also facing the Alzheimer's diagnosis that's been a very, very helpful resource to families once the person they love with Down syndrome is getting a little older and starting to exhibit those signs.
And if you are an adult with Down syndrome, do you get an automatic Social Security disability check?
So what it is SSDI is a little bit different from what the resource that most of our people get, which is SSI. So it's slightly different. SSDI, you know, is taken out of your paycheck, and SSI is a federal benefits. But yes, everybody with Down syndrome, provided they meet the very strict income limitations, they are eligible for SSI.
When was the last time that was upped, and does it need to go up?
It does need to go up. That's another thing that is a very, very long-term project for the National Advocacy and Public Policy Center, but raising the income limitations for SSI and Medicaid is very, very important for this population.
Seems critical.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Because basically with the limitations the way they're set currently, we're disincentivizing individuals with Down syndrome and other disabilities who rely on these benefits. We're disincentivizing them from working. You know, there's an entire group of people that were saying, oh, you know, you can't work too much, even though they want to and they're ready, willing, and able. They're not incentivized in order to keep these benefits.
Dr. Brian Scottco, adults with Down syndrome, can they marry? Can they have children? What does that look like?
So we know that getting married is as much about emotion as it is about logistics, and people with Down syndrome definitely fall in love, and they do and have the right to be able to have a partner to love. It comes down to logistics. Do they have the social structures and the supports from their families and the communities to be able to do so? And many are able to do so successfully. So again, it is about what are the barriers that might need to be disentangled in order to allow for the person with Down syndrome to live their most robust life. But I must say that there are many adults with Down syndrome who do have boyfriends and girlfriends and don't want to get married, and that's their right as well. And how do we make sure that transportation is not a barrier for them being able to access their loved one and getting together?
And are they able to have children, and can those children be genetically typical?
In general, people with Down syndrome are believed to be subfertile, meaning that it is less likely for them to be able to have children because either the sperms or the eggs are not working as well genetically. With that said, it only takes one sperm and one egg to create one embryo. So with that, all people with Down syndrome do need to be counseled about having safe sex practices if they do want to be sexually active. If they do have children with Down syndrome, which is an extremely rare event in the United States, when it does happen, unfortunately, it is oftentimes because they are victims of sexual harassment. But we do have research from other countries where sexual limitations are not as great as they are in the United States, and people with Down syndrome can have both children with and without Down syndrome.
Nicole Galindo with the Down Syndrome Association of South Texas. Do we have like group homes here, maybe in Bexar County, where individuals with Down syndrome live together and are able to function in that kind of way?
I know there's some apartment communities that are not just for individuals with Down syndrome, but with individuals with disabilities. We do have a frequent adult who comes to some of our programs, and he lives in an apartment complex with two friends, and the two roommates are on the spectrum, and so there are communities like that, but not specifically to where it's just for Down syndrome individuals.
Right. So is there some way to have a reach out and organize? Because I imagine if you're a parent and you have a child with Down syndrome, and your first concern is like, as I age out of this lifetime, who's going to take care of my child? You know, how does that work? And we want to set them up for adulthood that they can be able to take care of themselves.
Right. And we have those resources. Like I said, there's sometimes where we can't specifically provide them. We guide the parents to places like the ARC of San Antonio, who are able to really provide those resources. And, you know, what are the rights when it comes to these individuals, when it comes to housing?
Things like the housing crunch that we have here locally, mm-hmm. that impacts vulnerable communities. This certainly is a vulnerable community. When we find out that their income is limited, this is not, you know, we don't have a way to protect this vulnerable community. Maybe we ought to be thinking about that as we have these discussions about housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're completely right. I think it goes, there's so many more boundaries, especially with the age span of individuals with Down syndrome increasing. Because before, you know, like I said, like we all knew it was lower, and it's increasing now. And I think it needs to be a topic of conversation to see how we can provide these things for the individuals with Down syndrome.
And Ashley Helsing with the National Down Syndrome Society, how are we doing this as a nation to talk about making sure that adults with Down syndrome are protected, they're not being set up to be exploited in any way? Is there a cop on this beat?
So we are actually in the process of launching our housing commission to really take a look at what is currently out there for individuals with Down syndrome that, you know, allows them to be independent but still safe and have those proper supports that they need. You know, it's really the next frontier. We're very, very focused on making sure that individuals with Down syndrome get competitive integrated employment right now, but the next frontier is really housing and where, you know, they're going to live once they want to move out of mom and dad's house because they have an amazing full-time job and they want to live that independent life.
And Dr. Brian Scottco, many parents, when they get the news that they have a child with Down syndrome, they may wonder about did they do something or didn't do something that could have lessened that likelihood. What do you tell them?
We tell them no one is to be blamed for that extra chromosome. There's nothing that the mother did or the father did. It is a random chance occurrence. And what we all hope to is together with medical professionals and Down syndrome support groups and people with Down syndrome themselves is to help them in that journey from that moment of shock, that moment of receiving the difficult news, ultimately to the moment of acceptance. Because when families reach there, it really is a joyful to see the celebrations that happen every day in every home, in every classroom that has someone with Down syndrome. And so we're there to support them in the process.
Are there populations that are more likely to have a Down syndrome individual?
We know that Down syndrome occurs naturally in all different races and ethnic groups. However, there is disparities between the ethnic and racial groups in terms of their propensity to abort or terminate a pregnancy. We know that those who identify as being Caucasian are more likely to terminate a pregnancy with Down syndrome, and those identifying as Hispanic are less likely. There also is some cultural variation based on where you live in the United States. Those living in New England are more likely to terminate a pregnancy. Those living in the South are less likely. So biologically, there is no difference, but it results in individual decision-making.
And Dr. Brian Scottco, what do you think ought to be done to help adults with Down syndrome live independently?
Well, we know right now it's a state-by-state basis in terms of the resources that are allocated and how they're allocated to support adults with Down syndrome living. Most states, it is a rare few of people with Down syndrome who actually receive some state funds to be able to live independently, and so families need to either marshal their own supports or those of families. I think what we really need is a look at how do we support our citizens who are actively contributing to our communities who have disabilities to make sure that they could live as semi-independent lives as possible. So I think it's a look at the state laws, it's a look at the structures within our communities, and ultimately the value systems that all of our communities have.
Okay, and so as you're saying that this is something that happens to all demographics, and so this happens in families with resources and without resources, and it seems unfair that those families that have an abundance are able to cope with this and families that are not so well resourced or having to struggle. So maybe we should come up, like with Ashley Helsing said, those checks that need to have a little more weight to them.
We also know from research that sometimes resources correlates in the opposite way. So those families who have the least resources are sometimes the ones who celebrate and love their children no matter what. And we've seen from some research those families who come from very wealthy backgrounds sometimes struggle the most and are oftentimes more likely to terminate a pregnancy if that child might not fit in with what they perceive to be their family ideals.
Mm.
So I oftentimes say resources might offer some clues into decision making, but certainly we want to make sure it's not a barrier or access to good care.
Absolutely. And we have a message from Christina. She says, I have Down syndrome and I live a full life, graduated from high school. I have a job. I speak multiple languages. I can do anything. And thank you for messaging us, Christina. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.